This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. It's Health and Living. I'm Meera Sivasothi. May 10th was World Lupus Day, and consultant rheumatologist and consultant physician Dr. Benjamin Chia is in the studio with us. We're going to be discussing the latest in lupus care and management, as well as some of the issues that have been highlighted during the recent World Lupus Day events. If you have a question for him, give us a call. The number is 03 77 109 thousand. You can tweet BFM Radio or WhatsApp 016 201 9000. Welcome, Dr. Benjamin. How are you today?
I'm fine. Thank you for having me.
We've discussed lupus before, but you just want to go through what lupus really is. It's also known as SLE, I understand.
Yes. So the actual name is actually quite long. No. So it's called systemic lupus erythematosus. There's actually 11 syllables, so it doesn't help. So it's a little bit difficult to pronounce for a lot of patients.
Yeah.
What it is actually a chronic autoimmune condition. When we say chronic, it's because currently there's no cure, so it's a lifelong condition. Patients do live with it. It's an autoimmune condition. It's a situation where the body's immune system actually attacks its own self. So usually the immune system is meant to defend its own body, but in this situation, it actually attacks its own body. So as with the name systemic, it's because it affects almost every organ system in the body. And therefore, the presentation of patients can be very different. So they can vary from even being very mild to being very severe as well. And lupus in Latin actually means wolf. Perhaps it's because of the mystery surrounding SLE in centuries ago. And erythematosus means, in general, inflammation. So it's actually a systemic general inflammation, and it's an autoimmune condition where the body actually attacks its own self.
And there are many autoimmune diseases. Why the focus on SLE?
So we used to say SLE, it's the mother of all autoimmune disease.
Why?
Just the fact that it can affect almost every organ system in the body. We would tell patients there is a potential that it can affect you from head to toe. Commonly, it's obviously the skin, the joints, but it can also affect your internal organs as well. One of the most common internal organ involvement is actually your kidneys. And it may not manifest as certain symptoms apart from having very frothy urine.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of patients do present a little bit later if they do not manifest any outward symptoms. So it's the duty of the doctor to actually monitor for internal organ involvement. And we always say that there are no two lupus patients that are exactly the same. And that's what makes it challenging both for the patient to recognize that it is lupus, as well as for the doctors as well, because they can be as subtle as just fatigue. So a lot of patients will come and say, I feel very tired all the time, I can't get myself out of bed, to even very florid conditions where they end up in our ICU, and they do have multiple organ involvement all at the same time. So there is a huge spectrum that lupus can present with.
If you speak to many patients, they would say that they went through so many doctors and were not diagnosed until, you know, much, much later. And that's probably because symptoms mimic other conditions as well. So how would we know it's lupus and not something else? I mean, fatigue, you can be fatigued just because you didn't sleep well, you know, and it's often brushed off, go get some rest and you'll be fine. So how do you know then it's lupus and not something else?
So it's a very common scenario where patients would go and see many doctors, or they would see the same doctor over and over again, and they can't really resolve that symptom. And it's usually after several visits, sometimes a delay of even years, mm-hmm. before they finally think of actually investigating for lupus. And you're quite right, because a lot of times someone who presents with fever and joint pain, you do not think of lupus straight away. So certainly if it's recurrent and if they fit that profile. So first of all, they tend to affect females. So 90% of lupus patients are females. The peak incidence is actually between the ages of 20 to 40. And this is actually the most productive times of their lives as well. Secondly, is also to understand the family history. So a lot of times, autoimmune conditions cluster within family members. They may not necessarily be transmitted from parents to children, but sometimes in your distant relatives as well. Hence, it's actually very important to understand the conditions that actually run in your families, because they will alert the doctor much earlier to a particular condition, and in this instance, to lupus as well.
And coming back to women, is it the hormones that are more, that make you more vulnerable to an autoimmune disease like lupus?
It's a good question. Sometimes it's quite difficult to answer that, but a lot of research goes into that. One of the things is they feel that men do not get it so frequently is because they actually need a combination of genes before they actually manifest with lupus. And that probably also explains why men do get a more severe form of lupus when they do get it. The second obvious cause is the female hormones. And there's a lot of evidence now that the female hormone estrogen actually has an effect on the immune system. So that explains perhaps why 90% over of lupus patients are actually females.
Mm-hmm. It's a double-edged sword, isn't it? But what's the population? How big a population are we looking at that's affected by lupus?
So in Malaysia, we don't really have an answer to that. We know that Asians get a more severe form of lupus, and that is proven in many research, especially amongst populations in Singapore and Hong Kong. But the exact numbers in Malaysia, it's unknown at this time. So the burden of this disease is still not known. So a lot of times you would reference other populations, but that may not actually give you the exact picture. Hence the important need of actually having a lupus registry in Malaysia.
Do we have one?
At this moment, no. They may have separate registries within different hospitals, but they do not have a central registry. And hence, there is already a plan to set up this lupus registry, because we need to understand what is actually the burden of this disease, so that at least the government could allocate the necessary funds and resources if the numbers not only are significant, but because it also affects a very important segment of society, which are the young, productive females.
Okay. You are part of the SLE Society, or
That's
association.
Right.
What do you guys do there?
So we are predominantly, the Persatuan SLE Malaysia, it's predominantly a patient support group. So a lot of our activities are actually to support patients. A lot of times when new patients are diagnosed with SLE, they have really nowhere to turn to. They would read up on the internet, and it would make them even more fearful as well. And it's to make sure that they are not alone in this condition, because there's a lot of support from fellow patients as well as their family members. So we do organize a lot of events to bring patients together. At the same time, we do have a lot of forums. We run a lot of forums, and we do have a lot of educational materials, basically to get the message out there to highlight what lupus really is. At least if they do have some of the symptoms, they could actually discuss it with their doctors.
What are some of the challenges of the patients?
Well, I think a lot of times, because no one knows mm-hmm. what lupus is, so that's a lot of mythical beliefs that you have probably done something wrong, and a lot of patients actually shy away as a result, or they do not actually seek help. Secondly, lupus can sometimes be very disfiguring. So they do present with very commonly a rash on your face. Some patients may lose hair. And at an age where the looks are very important for a female, that can actually be very distressing for a lot of them. And a lot of them actually go into depression, and they stop seeking help because they feel that they cannot face the public or other people, including their friends as well.
Mm-hmm. But that's not everybody. Just a certain group may have the rash on the face. Some may not have it. It presents in all sorts of forms, isn't it?
That's right. But very commonly, they do have some degree of rash on their face.
Okay.
And they're usually photosensitive, which means they're actually sensitive to the sun.
Mm-hmm.
That's
okay.
Right.
And how do you diagnose lupus?
So it's actually a collection of both your symptoms, your signs, and also some blood investigations as well. So you need to exhibit some of the symptoms of lupus, for example, the facial rash, as we mentioned, the joint pain, hair loss, even fatigue as well, recurrent fever, and of course symptoms in terms of, again, the skin rash, or some people have that typical hair loss as well, and that really actually gives credence to the diagnosis of lupus. And in terms of the lab results or the lab investigations, they do take bloods and they check for autoantibodies. These are the antibodies that are attacking yourself. And the commonest test that is being done is actually a test we call the anti-nuclear antibody. So if majority of lupus patients will be positive for these antibodies, there's always a caveat because we know that a lot of people screen for these antibodies despite being very well. So they can be present in normal populations as well. So just having a positive anti-nuclear antibody may not mean much. So it needs to have that collection of symptoms, signs, as well as the lab positive lab results.
Obviously, something triggers that antibody. And in females, it's probably estrogen?
We don't know the answer to that. If we did, we would have known how to prevent it. We do know it's a collection of probably a combination of genes. So there's definitely a lot of genetic factors in there, and also a component of environment as well. Whether there is an environmental trigger for people who are predisposed to having this condition is left to be seen, but no one can really pinpoint what the exact cause really is. There has been isolated reports where lupus clusters within a geographical location because of some environmental contamination. Mm-hmm. So we do know that there is definitely some environmental component to that. But it's difficult to isolate the cause at this time.
Okay. Would you say psychosocial? Because sometimes I know of people whose stress can trigger lupus. Am I correct?
So we know that stress can affect the immune system. And just to draw a parallel to another autoimmune condition called psoriasis, we do know that stress can sometimes trigger psoriasis. Well, lupus is a little bit more complex, but perhaps certainly handling stress would be very important. I suppose there's no situation where it's totally stress-free. That is impossible. Yeah. But I think it's to train individuals on how best to handle stress. And I think that would be key as well.
So how to be more resilient.
That's right.
It varies from one person to the other, isn't it? I mean, some of us cope well, some of us don't cope as well. But very subjective indeed. We're discussing lupus. It was World Lupus Day on the 10th of May. Well, we've made it just in time. It's the 31st of May today. Tomorrow is June already. Consultant rheumatologist Dr. Benjamin Chia in the studio with me. We are discussing the latest in lupus care. If you have a question for him, the number is 0377109000. Give us a call. You can text 0162019000 or WhatsApp. You can tweet us at BFM Radio. Good afternoon. Welcome to the show. I'm Meera Sivasuthi. In our health segment today, Dr. Benjamin Chia, a consultant physician and rheumatologist, also part of the Persatuan SLE Malaysia, we're discussing lupus care. It was World Lupus Day on May 10th. If you're wondering what that is, it's actually an autoimmune disease. Dr. Benjamin's actually shedding more light on, getting us up to speed with, how it actually works. Women seem to be more predisposed to this condition compared to men. We do not know what causes it. There is no cure for it. Am I correct, Dr. Benjamin?
That's correct.
Okay. We have a question here. During menopause, do the attacks lessen, especially for discoid lupus, which is hair loss? Will it just go away as we age?
Well, the disease will still continue to be there, so there's still a potential for what we call a lupus flare, which means that the lupus becomes more severe at certain times. Interestingly, as someone ages, the lupus sometimes become a little bit less aggressive. It tends to be most aggressive when it first presents at a much younger age as well. whether it's because there's a change in your immune system as one ages, or it's because of treatment that is currently undergoing, or whether the fact that you're quite right, as someone enters menopause, where there is less estrogen, certainly less of a trigger for lupus, that's possible. So for a lot of patients, as they grow older into their 60s and 70s, they tend to have a less severe form of lupus, and they tend to go into what we term as remission.
Okay. Some of us would misunderstand this. You have mentioned that there is a hereditary component for sure. Is it contagious?
Short answer to that, no, it's not.
Okay. There you go. Got that out of the way. Just like psoriasis, everybody thinks it's contagious, but it's actually not. It's an autoimmune disease. Do we know, besides women, who else is more susceptible? And for those who have family history, is there anyone else?
Well, certainly not to forget the men as well. So men do develop lupus. And when men do develop it, they tend to be a little bit more atypical. So they do not present with sometimes the classical symptoms of a rash in your face or joint pains or hair loss. They can present very subtly and with a lot of internal organ involvement as well. So men do have lupus, and when they do have it, there is a potential that they can get a more severe form of lupus.
Okay, so now let's say we've diagnosed the condition. What happens after?
So clearly, it's very important to understand what the disease really is, or what the condition can potentially involve. Treatment would be important, and understanding the medications that we use in treatment is also important as well, because a lot of medications that we use have some very distressing side effects mm-hmm. as well. One of the common medication that we use is steroids. And when we mention the word steroids, a lot of patients will just say, oh, okay, hang on there. It's because it's notorious that steroids have a lot of side effects, which can sometimes change not only your physical appearance, but if it has a lot of long-term side effects. And so it's important for us to explain to patients what some of these side effects are. As with steroids, there's always a eventuality that we will try and stop them. So we will try to minimize their exposure to steroids. There are other medications that we will need to start in place of steroids. One of the common medications that we use is a medication called hydroxychloroquine. It's a medication that was originally created for malaria, mm-hmm. but now we know that it has immunomodulating properties, so it does affect the immune system in a way that helps to control lupus.
Is that the one that's been found in some cosmetic products?
No, I think it's
okay,
a little bit different.
Something else, yeah. Okay. Sure. Carry on. So you were saying side effects.
So there are side effects to a lot of medications that we do use, and hence it's very important to explain to patients what some of the potential side effects will be.
So first line of management of lupus is most of the time it's steroids, or almost always steroids.
Yep, steroids is commonly used, and the reason is because it works very fast. And sometimes the that is important in controlling the condition rapidly.
So it's your immune system is out of control. So what it's actually doing is it's suppressing the immune system.
That's correct.
Okay, and so after a while, you try and wean people off the medication, but then they go on. You know, I was reading one story where the lady said she was free of any sort of symptoms for 10 years, and then she got a flare. What's a flare?
So it's a flare. It's a situation where lupus becomes more active. Patients tend to flare in the same way as they first presented, so a lot of them would know when they feel unwell. But there are some patients who actually flare in a different way. So the key is actually to monitor yourself anytime you do not feel well, especially when you have lupus. It's so important to discuss it with your doctors, because then at least they can look into it a little bit more urgently as well before it gets out of hand. we do know that once the disease grips you and it attacks a lot of organs and it becomes a little bit more severe, sometimes they can potentially run into trouble.
Okay. So what it's doing is it's predominantly attacking organs, depending.
That's right.
Okay. Question here from Yong. He's saying, correct me if I'm wrong, but is lupus disfiguring, is it milder compared to leprosy, for an example?
Good question. Lupus can be disfiguring. I think one of the classical example is the singer Seal. Mm-hmm. So he has a scar on his face and it's still present till today. He had discoid lupus and that has left some scarring in his skin. Sometimes with hair loss as well, especially when it damages your scalp, if the skin lesion was very severe and it damages your scalp, yes, there's a potential that you may not regrow your hair. So it can be disfiguring in that sense. Having said that, of course, most of the time they do get better. At least it leaves a very minimal impact. Mm-hmm.
So at the Persatuan SLE Malaysia, you also support patients in terms of emotional distress. You know, I can imagine how difficult it must be trying to cope once diagnosed with the condition.
So we do have a lot of volunteer counsellors and they're actually trained to handle a lot of situations. And the volunteers are actually either patients themselves or their family members. So we feel that that is important because they would understand the situation best. And also for patients to know that they're actually not alone. They're talking to someone who has actually experienced this situation. I think it helps. And we do have a session we call Share and Care. Mm-hmm. There is actually a support group between counsellors and patients. And we've always had very positive reviews from that because it does help to sometimes get it off your chest.
Yeah, of course. And can something like lupus, can you avoid it by any chance?
Nope, not at this time. It's important to be vigilant. I mean, lupus is one of the many thousands of conditions out there. I think what's important is to understand your family, understand your background. After all, we're all made up of genes and we do inherit a lot of our genes, we inherit all our genes from our parents. And it does help to understand your family tree and what actually runs in your family. I think that's probably the best advice we can give. And as usual, it's always important to have a healthy lifestyle. We now know that, for example, smoking is one of the possible triggers of autoimmunity. And one of the strongest association is actually with another autoimmune condition we call rheumatoid arthritis. Mm-hmm. So smoking actually can trigger rheumatoid arthritis. And it can be the first trigger to that autoimmunity.
Okay.
So it's important to not
smoke. All right. The power of smoking and the havoc it can actually cause. What about diet? Does it make a difference at all?
At this moment, there is no evidence that any diet actually predisposes you to lupus. But the general advice remains the same that they should have a balanced diet.
Okay. So, you know, all those diets that that you read off on the internet, would you say take it with a pinch of salt or?
Definitely.
Okay. All right. All right then. Any breakthrough in the horizon that you're excited about?
Well, there's definitely a lot of research going into lupus, and the understanding of lupus is definitely growing. The understanding of our immune system is actually growing as well. However, of course, to the patients, there has not been many changes over the years. We know that there's only one medication that was approved over the last 50 years, so that's how slow the development of medication really is.
And what is that? What was that medication?
It's belimumab, so it's a targeted therapy. These days, they are actually looking into targeting very specific areas of your body. This is in the hope that it will have minimal side effects and yet still have the maximal outcome.
So in this case, what are you targeting?
There is actually a lot of targets, but they do target what we call immune cells, the B cells, T cells. Yeah.
Okay. Not the genes.
No, not yet.
Not the
at
genes.
This time.
Okay. Is it a multi-gene thing rather than a single gene, and hence the challenge?
It probably is, and I always tell patients that at the end of the day, lupus could be a different. It's actually different, subtly different conditions under a big umbrella of lupus. And that's why traditionally when they look at genes, they look at lupus as a whole. And that's why it was extremely difficult to identify a culprit gene. It's because we probably need to break that down even further and understand that each lupus could be a disease on its own.
Wow. That's how complex it is at the moment. Okay. William is asking, what are the probabilities of lupus in human beings? Which country has the largest population of lupus patients?
Well, I certainly do not have the answer to that. There are several registries that are currently ongoing and collecting data, especially in North America as well as in Europe. I think in Asia, there's still a paucity of such data. So we do not know the actual numbers of patients with lupus. Well, as I mentioned, we do know that Asians or Asian patients with lupus tend to get a more severe form of lupus. So they get a lot more internal organ involvement, and they do present more severely as well, mm-hmm. as compared to a Caucasian counterpart.
Okay, and the African regions as well.
And the African, that's right, right. So the Africans also do get a more severe form, you're right.
Okay. It was World Lupus Day, as I mentioned, the 10th of May. What were some of the main concerns?
Well, certainly there needs to be, I think, a greater need to educate patients about lupus. As much as we would like to educate patients, there's also an increasing need to educate doctors about lupus as well, because a lot of times it really needs a high index of suspicion before someone really goes and investigate for lupus. And therefore, education would be key. It's always a continuing process as well. Secondly, it's obviously research. The treatment for lupus and understanding for lupus can only progress if there is more research into lupus. And at least in this region, there is a lack of funding for research, especially in lupus, when they do see it as a condition that is perhaps less prevalent and less impactful to a country with limited resources, and therefore a lot of focus is not placed on research. And therefore it's extremely important that we do understand what's the burden of this condition like to a particular country, to understand which segment of population it affects, because if it affects your most productive part of your population, that is going to have a lot of long-term repercussions for any country. And therefore, if you understand that, you can perhaps place more resources and funding into lupus research especially.
Everybody's scrambling for funding,
I know,
isn't it?
Yes.
Where do you put the money, really?
It's never enough.
It's never enough, no. Some patients have expressed that the impact of lupus on their daily living is most misunderstood by physicians. You're a physician. Do you think that's true?
I think that to some extent is true. When you go into a physician's room, the most you could spend time is 15, 20 minutes. Perhaps half that time would be involved in paperwork, and the other half it's to listen to you. And in a lot of times, there's really not enough time to really tell the doctor about all your problems. and at the same time to discuss the issues and the questions that you may have. Hence, we feel that it's important that now there is more connectedness to the patient, that we should no longer see patients only during the time when the patients walk into the room. We should be able to understand patients even when they're not in the room as well. And I think currently with the presence of digital technology, that can be better achieved. So the way we care for patients should change because traditionally, yes, there is an unmet need that patients are not really, patients can't really vocalize all their thoughts during the short period of consultation with the doctor.
Mm-hmm. Apps, do you see them coming in handy?
No, definitely they would be. So, but they need to be rolled out in a proper manner so that at least it's also not burdensome to the doctor as well, which probably need to see a lot of patients, but it's to give the doctor a better understanding of how the patient has been. So for that limited time that the patient sits with the doctor, he would actually have known how you have been over the last 2 or 3 months, rather than trying to find out at that time how you were over the last 2 or 3 months, which most patients can't remember anyway.
And it's time-consuming.
That's right.
Better caregiving for patients at the Persatuan SLE Malaysia. How do you empower caregivers?
Again, it's education. So knowledge is always very important. When you do have a better understanding of what the condition really is, and you have a better understanding of the medications, the side effects, and where to look for help, I think that's very important. And in that sense, it gives patients that feeling that they have always a place to turn to, and I think that is extremely important. We also do have a fund as well. We call it the SLE fund. That fund actually helps patients directly by giving them financial aid when they need it. We do know that healthcare is expensive. Some medications that patients may need may cost a lot of money, but it's extremely important for them to actually have those treatment. And we do try our best to provide at their times of need.
Do you see any possibility of curing lupus?
Hopefully in the future. Mm-hmm. I think the key would be gene therapy. And once we understand which genes are involved and we do have the ability at this time to change genes, but we have the ability to know which genes to change, mm-hmm. there may be a potential cure.
Switch them off, really.
Or change the gene, that's right. It's probably some time away.
Yeah, some time away. Okay, but not impossible.
Nope.
Okay. So in terms of Malaysia, do you think we are doing enough for lupus? People suffering from lupus?
Well, we can always do more. With Persatuan SLE Malaysia, one of the... we have always been grateful to our sponsors and donors because they do help a lot of our activities to reach out to patients. And most of our sponsors and donors do have an indirect relation to lupus. Either they have a family member with lupus or they have an employee with lupus. But what we need now is actually a lot more help. It's always difficult to raise funds, especially with the current economic situation as well. More so for a condition where not many people understand.
Yes.
It's not a glamorous condition. And therefore, there are not many people that actually step forward. But we're thankful that there are people that generously donate as well.
Okay. Is there a website where, you know, if we want to donate that we can go to?
Yep, so there is a link on a website, www.lupus.org.
Fantastic. Would you have a message on lupus care?
I think I have a message for lupus patients. And I think if you are listening, there's always help out there. And be strong. There is the power of staying positive. It's extremely important in tackling any condition.
Thank you for joining us today. Dr. Benjamin Chia, a consultant physician and rheumatologist, talking to us about lupus on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.